It's 5 o'clock in Pirate Country, and it's time to get pumped up with the P-Man. Hit the door and hit the road. 94.3 The Game is going to get you home, and the P-Man's not holding back.
Yes! Yes! Pirates win! Pirates win!
Bring on the Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Holy mackerel! Oh, my goodness!
The flagship station of the ECU Pirates.
All right, a packed and stacked edition here from the Working Man's Beach today. The great P-Man here with you. And we are getting ready for the hour of power here on the 94.3 The Game, the flagship of the Pirates, 94.3thegame.com streaming, and also the IBX Media app, which is free for Google Play and at the App Store for download.
Do it live!
We are. Do it live! We are indeed today. Brian Mull joins us later in the show. We'll talk about some of the college basketball's comings and goings. As far as coaches go, there's been some breaking news reported on that this afternoon. Last night it was confirmed Cal will be back. So we'll get into all of that with Brian Mull coming up later in the show. We'll have a Pirate report as ECU defeats the Wilmington Seahawks last night in come from behind fashion, 7-4. East Carolina with a win and a season sweep of the Sea Squawks. So there you go. That will be featured in our Pirate report coming up. Philip the Ref Pilkington is with us here.
A lot of love in this room.
There always is when Pilk's around. Pilk, hello.
How's it going, P-Man? You excited? Less than 24 hours away from opening day. How you feeling about it?
Well, I see you nerds did that today on IGO Show.
Yeah.
And in case you don't tune in at noon, shame on you, because you could listen to Hoist the Colors, the radio with Steven IGO and company. IGO's got a huge budget. He has all these different people on and all these different people on the show behind the scenes and all. We're just a Pilk. It's just a mere two-man operation. It's,
hey, Pilk, man, and myself. You know, the great things come in small packages.
Well, yes. I've always said we're sort of we're like Letterman in the old NBC days. You know, we don't have the biggest budget or the biggest staff, but we always have a little bit of fun. So I see where, let's see here. Joey Football has picked the Braves over the Orioles in the World Series, right?
That is correct.
Okay. You were picking the Dodgers over the Orioles?
Yep.
I don't agree with that. I don't think the Dodgers will. I think all this Shohei gambling stuff's going to linger on.
Oh, I hope you're right. I hope that I jinx the heck out of the Dodgers. I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I know. IGO went the. I thought IGO was a Mariners fan. IGO went the went Atlanta over the Orioles, right?
Yep.
And then who is this other fella in the picture?
Bobby Harward.
This guy has a lot of different looks. He's got the Orioles over the Braves. I'm not picking Cincinnati to do anything. Remember I picked Cincinnati a couple years ago to make the wild card, and that was the year they won like two games in their first 40?
Yeah.
Tell you what, I'm going to give you my World Series. You want me to do it right now?
Yeah.
Okay. Phillies, Astros.
Okay,
and I'm going to take Philadelphia over the Astros over Houston until somebody knocks off Houston. You got to put them in the World Series. I don't know if Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore is very talented. Don't get me wrong, but until somebody knocks off the Astros, right?
Do you think the Rangers can do it again?
Ooh,
that's a good point. They won it last year.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, well,
what's going to hurt them is they're out their two best pitchers until early June.
Yeah.
You know, right now,
but that doesn't matter. But
Gray,
if you can win enough,
Eovaldi, yeah, that's the thing. They just can't dig themselves in a hole. Gray and Eovaldi
can't
will
dig a bit,
be the top of that rotation. Those bottom three guys, who knows what's going to happen between now and June.
They can't. Yeah, they can't do the deal like Cincinnati and win two of their first 40, get whatever it was. Because really, if you don't, with the way the wild card's expanded now, Pilk, you just got to get in.
Exactly.
You know, I see where a lot of you guys pick the Cubs, and I mean, I like that, but I don't know. Again, until it happens. And do you not have San Diego in?
No, I don't.
And do you have the Cardinals winning the Central?
No, the Cardinals is a wild card. I think the West kind of beats each other up.
You had them winning the Central, and the Cubs is the wild card.
Did I? Oh, maybe I did. That's right. Yeah. I did. You're right. I think it's one of those things where the Cardinals have enough pieces, especially in the field, and they're going to trade one of those big-time outfielders at the deadline to add some pitching depth because they're very deep in a lot of positions, but they do kind of struggle with that pitching staff. We'll see.
But you would agree with me, though, that Houston is probably going to win the West because of what you said, the pitching situation in Texas. And the Rangers will get in. I feel like they'll win the wild card, or be a wild card team. But I just don't. You can't dig yourself a huge hole. But I mean, if you can just get by, and you're 2-3 games north of 500, south of 500, you'll be fine.
Yeah. Hey, with 7 out of 15 teams getting in, yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's so wide. You just got to get in now, and you got to be hot at the end of the year. That's really the way it's been the last few years. Who did Joey Football pick? Braves, Cubs, Central, West, Phillies, all right, Arizona, yeah, kind of forget about Arizona. Boy, the West, the NL West, whew, it's got
everybody
the Giants.
But the Rockies all right. are good.
Yeah. East, he's got the O's, he's got the Twins, he's got the Rangers, the Astros, Rays, New York. Okay, how are your Red Sox going to be, Pilk?
We might win 70 games, if we're lucky.
Okay, is this rebuilding? Is that what this is?
Sure, if that's what you want to call it.
So we got some news today about sports gambling in North Carolina. It nearly hit $200 million in its first week. Of course, it debuted the week of the ACC tournament. Pilk, have you seen the ads and heard the ads on the radio and seen them on the television and seen them pop up in your social media feeds? Have you heard about it that way? Because they're everywhere.
No, what are you talking about, Patrick? They're not advertising any of that.
They even have planes, I understand, flying over uptown Charlotte doing things like tugging a banner. So here are the first statistics from betting. The commission says that North Carolinians bet more than $198 million. All right. Now that includes the promotions, because I guess each one of these betting services, betting apps, they gave away, they were matching money, or they'd give you money up to a certain amount, that kind of thing. I think the standard was basically $200 to $250. And then there was something I saw either last night or earlier today where somebody was doing something for $150. But the point is they give you kind of free money, right? And the commission says they paid a little more than $141 million. So the betting operators netted $42 million. And they'll take that because, a lot of that, again, is the promotional money they were giving away that was, people won and that sort of thing. First day numbers. Excuse me. Let me pull this tweet up here. First day numbers. Paid wagers, $11.5 million. Promotional wagers, $12.3 million. So a total wagering of just under 24. Amounts paid as winnings, $12.2 million. This is on the first day. And then the gross wagering revenue was $11 million plus. The first week was $116.8 million. The promotional wages that week were $81 million. So see, Pilk, they got people hooked. They got the hooks in them with all the promotional wages. The total revenue comes to the 198 that we mentioned, paid out 141.6 and 42.7 going there. Let me see if there's anything on what they're expecting. Sports betting operators will have to pay the tax revenue by April 20th for March. Taxes for the previous month are due the 20th of each month. And that's where it's going to be, that's where things are going to be really starting to cook, right? When you get the tax money in. So we'll look for that next month, and we'll see you know, how much of that is. I'm sure we could figure it out, but we'll see what the number is there. Pilk, we've heard about Charlie Baker. He's the lawmaker who Charlie Baker, the lawmaker, is the president of the NCAA, right? And a lot of people feel like he's a forward-thinking guy who's all for the student athletes. You know, he's talked about that kind of universal salary that the institution would pay on top of NIL. Are you familiar with this? Remember, we've talked about this story?
Yeah, the $30,000 per athlete or something crazy like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So Charlie Baker is, you know, by all accounts, such a forward-thinking, great guy, right? He is calling for a ban on college prop bets in states with legal sports wagering. Prop bets, which are short for proposition bets, are wagers not related to the final score of a contest. An example of such a side bet would be what, you know, over-under. Excuse me, how many three-pointers an individual will make in a game. I think you can do parlays where you know, Philip Pilkington's going to score 15-plus points and Scooter Rogers is going to grab 8-plus rebounds. You can, you know, do that. Prop bets, right?
We think that Scooter is going to get 8 rebounds. Do you know how tall Scooter is?
I'd take the under. I'd
yeah,
take the
maybe
under.
Joey Football will get 8-plus right. rebounds or Dom, right. but Scooter.
Right. Right. But I'd take the under on Scooter. So this guy wants to do away with prop bets. I would wager, pardon the pun, I would dare say that part of that money, that story, a lot of that, now I'm sure a lot of it, because a lot of people were, you know, probably placing bets for the first time and doing it with the, so a lot of people probably took, you know, the line or they took the winner and that kind of thing. But the prop bets are the thing. I mean, we've had people on to talk about this before out in Vegas, before the Super Bowl, what the prop bets are, time of the national anthem, that kind of thing. So I would think that that is going to be really, really popular in football season. So we'll see what the NCAA does. The NBA is looking at betting irregularities involving a Raptors player. So they think the props would be the way to get the players. I don't know. We will see. Baker says he doesn't want to be an issue at the collegiate level. All right. I wanted to get to that right off the jump. We'll have a pirate report coming up in a little bit, and I'm sure we'll cover this and that. Well, we'll go ahead and get to some of the ECU news as it pertains to the schedule and all that. So ECU's series with UAB is scheduled to start Friday with a doubleheader. The Thursday forecast, since it's now official, that series has been moved. It was originally set for Thursday due to the Easter weekend. Now it's a doubleheader that'll start Friday at 1 at Clark LeClaire Stadium. The second game of the doubleheader follows 50 minutes after the conclusion of the first game. Saturday's game is still set at noon between the Pirates and UAB Blazers. Other news out of ECU today. This is fairly big news. Heard this over the weekend that these guys were making up their mind and they decided to put their name into the portal. Jaden Walker has entered the transfer portal. Walker was the guy that year before this last season started the last 10 or 12 games at the point and was a big difference maker for East Carolina, you might remember. As he got healthier this year, the team played better. Bobby Pettiford will enter the portal after starting out his career at Kansas, then coming home, and he made a big deal about coming home, and now he's back in the portal. So they join Caleb LeCount in the portal. They join Brandon Johnson in the portal, Quentin DeBunje in the portal, and we'll see. Others, too, that have entered, Ben Biala's also in the portal as well. So we'll see where this goes and what ends up happening there. Now, and these guys all have, I'm sure, the option to come back. And, you know, if somebody's going in and they're trying to maybe determine what their worth is so they could perhaps stay and get some NIL money, I mean, some of that goes on. But I know with Brandon Johnson, he's definitely wants to go somewhere postgraduate and get NIL money, but also have a chance to you know, make the postseason. So, yeah. That's the news out of that today. Last thing for you here in our news roundup here to start the show. Have you read anything about P. Diddy's houses being raided Pilkington? Have you read about this? Have you heard about this?
I have, and I'm not going to lie. This is like the second time I had ever heard of P. Diddy. The last time I had heard of him is when he said the North Carolina Panthers were up for sale. And I lost all respect for him when he called us the North Carolina Panthers.
Well, he got the name one extra word. You know, it's like an extra syllable or punctuation can make all the difference.
One extra word. He was zooming in on the name when he said it. This says how much of a moron he is. No wonder his house is getting raided.
So this is a huge there's like all these Cuba Gooding Jr. Radio is involved in this. And Prince Harry, Meghan Markle's, involved in this. As part of this whole thing, a former basketball player at Syracuse has been arrested, right? And accused of being a drug mule for Diddy. Brendan Paul was listed on Syracuse's roster as a walk-on guard from 2018 to 2020. He was booked for cocaine and controlled substance possession and released Tuesday after posting $2,500 bail. This was down in Miami. You can get pop for cocaine, and you only have to pay $2,500 to get out. Combs is Diddy's alleged drug mule. And TMZ put out his shot. So the world of sports. And as Pilk said, the man who infamously called him the North Carolina Panthers. I'd forgotten all about that, Pilk, till you brought it up. I remember when he did it. It was sort of, I think we lampooned it here, to be honest.
Oh, we did.
Yeah. All right. That's that. We have some Diddy going to break. Yeah, there we go. Might be the last time it's ever allowed to be played. That's a huge story, by the way. Enormous. We're going to come back. We're going to do a pirate report, and then we'll talk some NCAA tournament with Brian Maul. Pilk will have an update for you. It's the Patrick Johnson Show here on a Wednesday.
And now, Patrick Johnson with today's pirate report on the flagship station of the ECU Pirates, 94.3 The Game.
All right, East Carolina comes back to beat UNCW, get the season sweep against the Seahawks last night. And it was a 7-4 final. The bullpen shut down UNCW. And Coach Godwin says that was the key to the matchup.
No question. I gave it the shank, the shirt, because he stuffed them the last three innings. But, of course, Eric Ritchie did a really good job of just settling things down. And Groller came in, then Danny Bill picked him up, and then Shinkman, man. But definitely the bullpen was the MVP of today.
All right, and he talked about the guys that stepped up at the dish.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a big swing by Chaz Myers, you know, down 4-0. And Chaz has been swinging the bat good and BP and stuff. And, of course, Riley being hurt, we got to move some guys around. And Chaz got a big swing off. And then McChrystal had two RBIs. Carter had an RBI. I think Starling had an RBI. So J-Dub had a big RBI up in the middle. So it's good to see those guys because, Starling and Jada have been pressing a little bit and just want them to have more fun.
And that Myers homer, according to Coach Godwin, changed the tone of the game.
It definitely changed the tone of the game. You know, the crowd was kind of, sitting back because we're down 4-0, and he gets a swing off and gets the crowd back in. So I thought the crowd was great, too. So love when Pirate Nation's chanting purple gold.
And he was asked about pumping up the crowd, was Coach G.
Yeah, I talked to the guys, which it's amazing to me. I asked the guys in the pregame how many of you guys have watched Caitlin Clark play, play extended. I watched the whole second half and the emotion and the passion that she plays. And, of course, they're playing on the home court, last home game for her, and she's run down the court getting the crowd into it. So, we play a lot better when the crowd's behind us.
He thought last night East Carolina was better than they were in the first meeting against UNCW.
Well, I thought we played better tonight than we played down at UNCW, but Randy does a great job with them. They've got a really good team. They're going to be, fighting for first place in the CAA like they do every year. So a lot of respect for Randy and what he does. And, of course, I coached with Randy when I was a volunteer assistant. So they got a great squad, and they're going to do good things this year.
And when Wyatt Lunsford-Shinkman came aboard, he was asked about the bullpen as a whole.
Yeah, I think something that kind of goes underlooked is Richie coming in second and being able to shut that down and kill any momentum they had. So everybody was great, but definitely Richie got us going.
And he talked about putting up all zeros down the stretch.
Yeah, it's something that we preach, being able to get in the zone fast and get quick outs and get off the field. So being able to do that and putting up however many zeros it was is huge.
And he talked about the various roles for guys in the pen.
It's awesome. I kind of go into every game as a Swiss Army knife, I feel like, so being able to do whatever's asked of me. So I don't really put a title on it, but whatever my name's called, I'm going to be ready.
All right. I think Maul is ready, so I tell you what. Pilk, you ready to do an update?
I am.
All right, we'll preview the Sweet 16. Talk to Brian Maul, so we'll do that. Right now, here's Philip the Ref Pilkington with the 94.3 The Game Sports Flash update and Pirate Report. Pilk, take it away.
Thanks, P-Man. We will start in Pirate Athletics, where last night, despite falling behind early, the baseball team rallied to win 7-4 over UNCW, and Coach Godman said it was in big thanks to the Pirate bullpen.
No question. You know, I gave it the shank, the shirt, because he stuffed them the last three innings. But, of course, Eric Ritchie did a really good job of just settling things down. And Groller came in, then Danny Bill picked him up, and then Shankman, man. But definitely the bullpen was the MVP of today.
They will be back in action Friday for a doubleheader starting at 1 o'clock. You can hear it right here on 94.3 The Game with network coverage starting at 12:30. ECU Lacrosse fell to Duke 14-12 last night. They got down big early but rallied back. It was just too little too late. The ladies will be back in action on Saturday at noon when they travel up to Cincinnati. Softball took care of Elon 9-1. That makes it 3 out of the last 4 for Coach Winkler's program. They will travel down to Boca Raton tomorrow to take on 25th-ranked FAU in a weekend series. A pair of Pirate guards have entered the transfer portal as both Jaden Walker and Bobby Pettiford Jr. will be on their way out of Greenville. To Major League Baseball, where it's less than 24 hours away from opening day, the Braves have cleared a roster spot for Jesse Chavez, who they signed yesterday by sending Jackson Stevenson to AAA Gwinnett, and David Robinstein has unanimously been approved to be the Orioles' new owner. That'll do it for 94.3 The Game Sports Flash Update and Pirate Report. On the other side of this timeout, we'll be joined by Brian Mould to talk Sweet 16 action.
Sometimes you just don't know if you want to kiss him or slap him.
Ow!
Either way, he'd probably like it. The Patrick Johnson Show on 94.3 The Game.
Back in on the Patrick Johnson Show, midweek edition, hump day, all downhill from here as we head towards the weekend. A reminder, Philip the Ref Pilkington will be talking baseball with Mike Mullis tomorrow as the Pirates begin a 3-game series with UAB, the first conference home series of 2024. We're only halfway through the season, pretty much, so a lot of baseball still to go. We're at the best part of the year for the college basketball season. I know a lot of people in the March Madness like the first two rounds because of all the upsets, the excitement. But this is if you're a basketball fan, this is the weekend, in my opinion, because this is the Sweet 16 down to the Elite Eight. And if they aren't great teams, they're teams that have hit their stride at the very least this time of year. And usually you get some pretty compelling matchups and good games. We'll talk about some of those matchups, plus the coaching carousel as it spins. Brian Mull, our old friend who covers college basketball, he was on Joe Lunardi's team this year. I didn't mention that, and I should have. So forgive me, Brian, for not giving you your Lunardi props. Okay. We welcome Brian Mull from the port city of Wilmington at BG Mull on X. All right, Brian, let's start with the NCAA tournament. It's kind of chalky. All the number ones made it through. Not surprising, though. This seems like the kind of year where, you know, the cream has kind of risen to the top.
Yeah, we had a pretty clear top 15, I think most people agreed. And really, even inside of that, a fairly obvious top 3 or 4, and certainly those teams have looked the part on neutral courts in the bracket, games where the referees don't have quite the same impact that maybe they have during a regular season game. They let them play a little bit, and the talent and coaching seems to rise to the top, and certainly that's what we have with the strongest Sweet 16, at least from a metrics and analytics perspective, in some time. While everyone loves the upsets early and the mid majors, and nobody's a bigger fan than I am, it's great to have teams that are the best teams playing this time of the year. It just makes for really 8 fascinating matchups on Thursday and Friday night.
All right, let's start with those matchups. Let's go Clemson, Arizona first. Arizona seems to be the they and UConn in their two games, the early games, seem to be the prohibitive favorites.
They do. Arizona has been the best team out west all year. Certainly the addition of Caleb Love, former UNC guard and the Pac-12 player of the year this season, has given them someone with experience, having played in a national title game. They're big. They're fast. They've defended better in the tournament than maybe they did at times. You know, they had a few lulls during the regular season, some head-scratching losses, but I think they're focused right now on getting out of that West region. A bit of a home court advantage being out there in Los Angeles, certainly a large contingent of Wildcats fans, and just a great matchup here. I mean, certainly Carolina, what they've done during the regular season and the way they looked against Michigan State and Charlotte, worthy of their number one seed, defending at an elite level, really an interesting style of defense that they're playing under Hubert Davis, where there's not a lot of help. You know, everybody is responsible for guarding their man and keeping him out of the lane and not putting them in a recovery or scramble situation. And they've done a great job of that. So they'll have their hands full with this Arizona team. Interesting to see the tempo here. I mean, we always think of North Carolina as being a team that wants to run, but they've not always done that this year. They've certainly played at a little more deliberate pace and more of a half-court game at times. Arizona certainly wants the game to get going up and down as much as possible. And I give a slight edge to the Wildcats. I just think their post depth is an edge here. But, again, was really impressed with Carolina's defense against Michigan State. I thought Seth Trimble in particular was a difference maker in that game. And even Baycott having some moments where he protected the rim, which hasn't necessarily been his forte through his career.
Yeah, so do I hear you right? I know Vegas has Carolina as a 4.5-point favorite. It sounds like you're already anticipating the Heels and Wildcats. But I think it was KenPom, at least some of the computer metrics have this more of a 50-50 between Bama and Carolina.
Yeah, KenPom's got Carolina as a 2-point favorite. When you look at Bama, they've just been an elite offensive outfit under Nate Oates ever since he arrived. They're going to put so much pressure on you with their ability to shoot the three from multiple positions. They've defended better against Grand Canyon than probably they have all season. I mean, they were giving up 90-plus points on the regular down the stretch in the SEC, and Oates basically called his team out and said, if we don't start to defend like some of my other teams have, it's going to be a short run in the tournament for us. So it seems like there's been some buy-in there. I mean, that's going to be a terrific game. I know I jumped the gun a little bit getting to the Arizona game. I do think Carolina wins this game. I just think that their experience and just the combination of Davis and Baycott, if they can continue to get Ingram to play, he's really the X factor for them. If he can continue to play, make shots, and just impact, he's a bit of a dog in the most flattering way. Like, he brings a toughness to that team that maybe they haven't always had in recent years.
Yeah. Let's talk about the other game that'll be played Thursday night. It'll be on TBS. It'll start after 10 from Boston, and that'll be the 3-seed and the 2-seed in the East Region, Illinois and Iowa State. To me, I think that this could be the game of the night.
I would agree with you. They say that styles make fights this time of the year. This is a game that we would probably never see during the regular season. I mean, an Illinois team that's played as well as anyone over the last month of the season has the best offense in the country per KenPom versus Iowa State team that has the best defense in the country. So really fascinating from an analytics perspective there. Who can impose their will on the game? Iowa State is comfortable playing in the 60s. They want to turn you over, just disrupt everything that you do offensively. Illinois wants the game up with a little more pace, and with Terrence Shannon playing at an elite level, that they can really dictate on that end. So this will be see who can control the pace there. Iowa State turn Illinois over? If they can, I think they'll be fine. But if the Illinois guards can handle the pressure and they can consistently get shots, they're probably going to get good shots. And I like Illinois' chances to upset, you know, pull a very mild upset here in what's basically a picking game.
All right, we've got Brian Mull with us here. By the way, Iowa State by 1.5, according to Vegas, as of this afternoon. Friday night to me is the more, you know, while that I think Illinois and Iowa State is the matchup of the night, Thursday night, I think Friday's just the more intriguing matchups up and down the board. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, Friday's going to be great, especially if you're a basketball fan in North Carolina with Duke and NC State going back-to-back on CBS. The Wolfpack are one of the stories of the tournament. I mean, won 7 games in 12 days to get to this point, each one of them an elimination game as far as their season continuing, and now facing a Marquette team that played much of the end of the season without their star point guard, Tyler Kolek, who, if you've not watched him play, he'll remind you a little bit of prime Steve Nash in the way that he can control the tempo. It seems like he can go wherever he wants with the ball. He makes layups, and he has a ton of three-point shooters around him. DJ Burns has been phenomenal for NC State with what he's been able to do, just consistently playing minutes that we didn't really see from him during the regular season. I think the key here is the big man matchup between Burns and Oso Iguodaro, the 6'11 senior from Marquette. Like, whoever can establish some inside scoring, and Marquette's probably got a little bit more consistent firepower around the perimeter, but you'd be unwise to count out this NC State team right now. They certainly have a level of belief that we have not seen during the Kevin Keats era. They're playing with tremendous confidence. They're defending unlike they did most of the regular season, which I know was frustrating for the Wolfpack Nation. And this could be terrific, a terrific one way to kick off Friday's action in the Sweet 16.
Gonzaga and Purdue, and the narrative is Purdue has exercised demons after actually, you know, not getting bounced from the opening round as the number one seed. And I'm still not, I mean, they're better than last year. I'm still not sold. There's a lot of things you've got there to me that not saying they can't win against Gonzaga, but I'm not sold. So, and Gonzaga is right now peaking.
They are. They really turned the corner in mid-February when they went on the road and defeated Kentucky in Rupp Arena. They're getting solid play from their guards, and they are scoring on the inside. They seem to be a little deeper than maybe they were early in the season. I like Purdue here. I just think Zach Edey's a cheat code in college basketball. To have a guy who's averaging 3 assists a game, can score against anybody in the country one-on-one. And then, they've continued to knock down the 3-point shot, which was their weakness last year. I think they were a 32% 3-point shooting team last year. They're around 40% this year. So that's been the biggest difference. And I think the road ends for the Zags. I mean, no knock on what they've accomplished. 9 consecutive Sweet 16, something only done 3 times in
pretty
the modern
good.
Era is really impressive. And to do it in a year when maybe they don't have the NBA lottery type talent that they've had the last few years makes it even more impressive. So, the Zags took advantage of a depleted Kansas team last week, but I think they run into a machine that's clicking on all cylinders.
Brian Mull's with us here. We'll do Duke Houston last of the basketball games. Creighton and Tennessee. There's a contrast in styles there. What wins out in Detroit late Friday night?
Offense. Yeah, I like this Creighton team. I mean, people forget that last year Creighton, with basically the same rotation, was within a very questionable call of reaching the Final Four, losing that game to San Diego State on a late foul that could have gone either way. And I think those guys all had opportunities to go elsewhere or maybe not take advantage of their COVID extra year or enter the NBA draft, and they all decided to come back. And they're playing with a purpose, and I think we saw that down the stretch when they looked like they were dead in the water versus Oregon on late Saturday night. And those sometimes when you escape a game like that, it looks like you were going to lose, that can propel you to a couple more victories. So I'm not sold on this Tennessee team. I was very unimpressed with their performance against Texas. I just think they're prone to long stretches of scoring where they're too reliant on Dalton Knecht. And I like Creighton here to advance to the Elite Eight for the second year in a row.
Oh, how about that? All right, Duke and Houston. Houston's near 5-point favorite in this one, 4.5, 5, depending on who you're maybe getting your action from. I think Duke played excellent last weekend. Now, was it a murderer's row they were facing? No. And it took Houston everything. They took a heck of a punch from A&M, several punches from A&M, and plowed through. Again, Duke's offensive and Houston is defensive, so it's another contrast in styles.
It is. This Houston team also shoots the ball better with the addition of L.J. Cryer, the transfer from Baylor, who is trying to become the first player to win national championships at two different schools. And Jamal Sheed, who's one of the best point guards in the country and just as tough as they come and won't come off the floor. I mean, that's the kind of backcourt. And certainly we know how physical they are and what they can do in the front court. So on paper, it's not a great matchup for Duke, but it kind of reminds me of a game 8 or 9 years ago when Duke played Baylor in a similar situation, a very rugged, physical, athletic team. They had to play them in the state of Texas, and not a lot of people were giving Duke a shot in that game, and they were able to not only win that one but go on to the Final Four. So, look, the way Jerry McCain is playing right now, the way that Duke is limiting its turnovers, if they could just get a reasonable game from the front court, obviously Filipowski, but certainly some kind of contribution from Ryan Young, who's going to need to play in this game. Sean Stewart, if he can come in and make a play or two like he did against James Madison. I mean, I think that's going to be huge. And it's a big game for Mitchell as well. He's going to have to he's not always been the greatest rebounder. He's going to have to impose his will a little bit, at least on the defensive glass. I think this is going to be a fist fight. Like you said, two contrasting styles. Duke's defense has been good. It's been exposed at times. And this will be a big litmus test for their toughness after they faced a similar opponent last year in Tennessee and just could not match the physicality. So, again, a lot of their guys came back for this opportunity, and now they have it. So this would be one of the bigger upsets of the Sweet 16 if Duke could pull it off.
Before we get to some coaching news, give me your Final Four.
Well, I think UConn and Purdue are the best two teams in the country, and I think they're going to
– Despite Painter being on the sidelines?
What's that?
Despite Painter being on the sidelines?
Yeah, I think there's only so much you can do with this squad. Arizona, yeah. I think, gets out of the West in a classic Elite Eight game with North Carolina. I think the Wildcats pull that out. And then I really don't have a great feel on what's going to happen down there in Texas. I mean, I think you can make a case for certainly Marquette, Houston, and Duke. I don't know that NC State can win two games, but wouldn't we all love to see a regional final between the Wolfpack and the Blue Devils? Wouldn't that be something? I think we get the chalk there. I think we get Marquette and Houston, and it just feels like Kelvin Sampson's bunch has been bound for the Final Four. So a pretty chalky Final Four, but that's the way I had it at the beginning, and I'm not going to change my mind now.
Yeah, why do that? All right, some coaching news. Let's start with some of the news that started to break today. Pat Kelsey, who's done a remarkable job at Charleston, making the move reportedly to Louisville. He seems like a real energetic guy. Now, I don't say – it's not a shtick with Pat, because I think that part of that is his personality. But, you know, this is a step up, and this is also kind of a different environment he's stepping into than where he's been.
Yeah, you know, this deal is close to being finalized. I guess they're still negotiating some of the fine print on the contract, but it sounds like that some of the other candidates have kind of bowed out. Maybe we're using it to get a little more NIL money in their piggy bank wherever they were. But Kelsey has been, you know, a guy who's been looking to move up now for several off seasons after back-to-back championships. And he does. He has a different type of style of play. They, you know, generally plays nine, if not 10 players. He's a super energetic guy. He's a guy that really has a strong marketing background for a head coach. You know, he believes in really getting re-energizing the fan base, which is something that needs to happen there in Louisville. And, you know, the best way to do it is by winning basketball games. And it's something he's proven that he can do at the mid-major level. This is a big step up in competition. You're going against the best of the best, and the expectations at Louisville are ACC and national championships. So, He's a talent magnet. Wherever he's gone, he's someone who loves the transfer portal. He has strong international connections, both on his staff and just through previous recruiting, where particularly Australia has been a market that he's been able to tap for all conference caliber players. So I would expect all of those things to continue if this deal does come to fruition. I'm happy for Pat. I've known him a long time since he was the third assistant at Xavier. Certainly, you know, spent time on Skip Prosser's staff at Wake Forest, and he has he's a guy who has a very clear vision of what he wants and how to build a program and how to get everyone on board, you know, from the top guy to the bottom manager. So I would expect this is obviously anything almost was going to be an upgrade for Louisville, but I think this is a good fit. And it opens one of the best mid-major jobs on the seaboard in Charleston, a place with ample resources and support and great tradition. And it'll be interesting to see which dominoes fall regionally, if any, to fill that opening.
Yeah, great point. All right, Dusty May leaves FAU to go to Michigan. I think a tremendous hire for Michigan. Does FAU, are they committed enough to kind of keep it rolling there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, they're at a turning point, no tradition whatsoever until Dusty May got there. It took him a while to build it. Certainly, if you watched any of their games this year coming off the Final Four year, I mean, it was one of the best atmospheres in all of college basketball. Season tickets sold out, the arena packed, the students came in. I think they do have resources there. I think football is the number one priority, but they would be foolish not to – you know, do all of their due diligence and hire someone, maybe not with a great name. Nobody knew who Dusty May was when he arrived there, but someone who can coach basketball and build, you know, build off of what he's done. It was interesting. I think a lot of people, some Michigan fans, assumed that two or three of his FAU players would come with him to Ann Arbor, but he didn't really seem to think that might happen at his opening press conference. So that's always something interesting to watch in this era when coaches move. And if some of those guys come back, there's no reason FAU can't be one of the top teams in the American again.
It seems like Andy Enfield's time at USC had just kind of run its course. You know, he could have continued. Yeah, but it seems like that's one of those situations. He's headed to SMU. SMU gets rid of Rob Lanier. Do we know, was Enfield on the radar early, or did they just feel like, in other words, was the move made with Enfield in mind, or was the move made to just go ahead and kind of get Lanier out because they felt like they just needed a change?
Yeah, I just think they needed a splash. They felt like with this move to the ACC, with their resources, they needed a coach who they felt they were confident had done it at the highest level. And Andy Enfield, although it's been a rocky couple of years, has proven that he can recruit at a very high level. And given the resources that he's going to have available to him in Dallas, I would expect that to continue. Texas has really, in the last decade, become one of the high school basketball hotbeds in the country as well.
Yeah.
With the talent that they've turned out. So, I mean, he can stay right there in his backyard and have plenty of NIL money to distribute. So I think, as soon as the SMU announced it was joining the ACC, I think the die was cast for Rob Lanier. Unfortunately, I mean, he did a good job in year two, getting them to the NIT and 20 wins. But, you know, he landed on his feet at Rice. So, it was always going to be, who can we get? What name can we get? We need to get people excited about SMU basketball as we're stepping up, making a dramatic step up in competition.
You mentioned Lanier. I think Lanier seems like he'd be a good fit at Rice. We'll see, though. Short on time, so I just want to skip to this. Cal, it's announced on Tuesday night by the Kentucky AD, is going to stay there for his 16th season. Did this come down to the economics?
I think it had to. I mean, when you're looking at replacing him, buying out his staff, hiring a new coach, et cetera, I mean, who knows, $75 to $100 million. And that's a lot of money, even at a place like Kentucky. I think their hands were tied a little bit. Calipari, I would not be surprised if you know, there's some shakeups on his staff. I think that when talking to some folks who are close to that program, they feel like that he's surrounded himself with a bunch of yes men, and that's not necessarily what any head coach needs. He needs some people that will challenge him a little bit. And so I wouldn't be surprised if there's some shakeup there. And maybe even you see Kentucky dabbling in the portal for some older, more physical front court guys. You know, this – when you go back and look at the one-and-done teams that Kentucky had that were successful, I mean, they were among the nation's best at defending and rebounding with just giants in the front court, and you just didn't want to go in there and try to score. And he's gotten away from that here in the last 4 or 5 years, and I think that's why they've been so susceptible to these upsets from mid-majors in the postseason. So I would think you'll see a recommitted Cal. I mean, he's a competitive dude, and he can't be – he's the most embarrassed as much as all their fans think they are.
Yeah. Hey, Brian – thanks a lot. Enjoy the hoops.
Okay. Thanks, Patrick. Everybody enjoy the ball and have a great weekend.
Brian Mull with us. We'll come back, wrap up the PJ Show.
And now, the stunning conclusion of the show. It's the P-Man here on 94.3 The Game.
The house of Bob Barker, who died, I think it was last year, right?
Sounds right.
99? Didn't go over 100. How cool was that? Bob Barker, it's like the wheel, didn't go over the 100 in that game, right? Anyway, his house in Hollyweird is for sale for about $3 million. It's like a four-bed, four-and-a-half-bath house. It's a little dated. They call it a fixer-upper. Apparently, his wife decorated it. And after she died, he didn't change anything. So it's got, you know, a lot of, or had a lot of antique stuff in it. But there's, you could, it's a beautiful home, but it's, you could tell it's a little dated. It was a Spanish villa built in 1929. He bought it in 1969.
Price is wrong.
I thought that was the one where he said the price is wrong. Bobby, he didn't say Bobby at the end of that one. That's the only one I could find.
Yeah.
Dang it. I'm blaming wrong. Ben. Ben put this wall together.
A lot of things to blame on Ben. All right. Back tomorrow, Mike Mullis. It'll be a Mully day. If I'm in place, I'll be on. If not, then Bilk will handle it, but we'll be with you.
Either and way, then, the people get what they really want, which is Mully.
Mully, Mike Mullis, who did a great job on the telecast last night. All right, thanks to Brian Mull for being with us. Thanks to Philip the Ref Pilkington. Pirate baseball doubleheader. No game tomorrow. Doubleheader with UAB Friday at 1 o'clock. The second game to follow about 50 minutes after. Have a great rest of your evening, and be careful in the morning. There'll be really heavy rains overnight and into tomorrow morning. Have a great evening, everybody.
Adoption can be a beautiful and rewarding experience. It can also be a legal